Welcome to Florida. Or in this case, welcome to Florida's.
That is the voice of New York Times best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. Yes, welcome to Florida's. We'll explain what that means later on. But want to start with Craig's Florida Phoenix column recently. And it's when we think about hurricane damage and the rebuilding and sort of the toll, we don't typically think about what you mentioned because it's hard to see, although you can smell it.
Yeah, you can definitely smell it. I wrote about, you know, I mentioned that, you know, if you've been through hurricanes before in Florida, you know, there are generally several stories that always pop up afterwards, and not just the guys who ride around with their shirts off on jet skis and wakeboards. But, you know, there's the stories on sketchy cleanup contracts. There are the stories on the boom and disease bearing mosquitoes because there's so much standing water around. There are the stories about multiple sewer spills. Well, the multiple sewer spill story has now led to another one, which is flesh-eating bacteria. Technically, it's not flesh-eating bacteria, but that's, you know, that's the new thing, is that Lee County has now broken the state record for the number of flesh-eating bacteria cases and deaths. And the record was set after Hurricane Irma in 2017. Mm-hmm. This is because of all the sewage that has spilled out and that people waded through. And I guess some people had, you know, cuts and things like that.
Sure.
And
bacteria waterborne got disease. Yeah. Bacteria. Yeah. Four deaths. It's nothing when you compare it to like traffic fatalities, but you know, we're talking, I mean, these are unusual deaths to be, I mean, that's almost like lightning strike or something.
Yeah. And it's preventable. It's preventable.
Totally.
And, and then I went on to point out that these sewage spills after Ian, they're big, but they're not unusual. We spill sewage into our waterways all the time. And it takes nothing more than a hard rain sometimes to make that happen.
And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of gallons. We're not talking like a 55-gallon drum tipped over and it went into the river. And I think that's one thing you really make clear in your column at the Florida Phoenix. Yes, these four deaths are in Lee County, but, you know, play dealer's choice with the state. And there were massive right where you are. I think Pinellas, you highlighted as having a massive wastewater dump as a result of Ian into Tampa Bay.
Yes, and there was one into the Indian River Lagoon, which is already fighting multiple toxic algae blooms as a result.
Okay, so explain how these happen. It's the volume of rain that overwhelms wastewater treatment facilities, which are already strained because of the masses of development.
Right. Yeah. So these facilities often are 20 or 30 years old. They were built for the capacity of, you know, the time they were built and maybe 5 or 10 years beyond that. Mm-hmm. But now we're well past that. Development has put additional pressure on there. There's been no upgrades because, you know, sewage is not a glamorous subject. Mm-hmm. And people in Florida generally don't like their taxes to go up. And developers really don't want to have to pay impact fees, which would be the easy way to pay for this stuff. So the sewage treatment plants are just utterly overwhelmed by a hard rainfall. And climate change says we're going to be getting a lot more of those soon. So, you know, so the alternatives here for the sewer plants is let the sewage back up into people's homes. No, they're not going to do that. Instead, they're going to turn it loose and put it in the nearest waterway and pray that dilution is the solution to pollution. But it's not. It's, you know, it's killing our waterways, which is one of the things that attract people to this state.
Yeah. FloridaPhoenix.com. You can learn more about this topic. And while we're on the subject of flooding, I cannot recommend enough from windstormproducts.com, that quick dam flood barrier. You get out of your head anymore. And I think if you live in Florida, you've got it out of your head that flooding is only the result of, you know, hurricanes.
Yeah.
There is so much sunny day flooding, regular flooding, ordinary flooding, flooding when you get a hard rain, flooding when you don't get a hard rain, just all of the runoff
King from tides and so forth. Yeah.
From impervious surfaces. If you've got a house or a shed or a barn or a garage or whatever it happens to be in a low lying or even a filled in wetland, and God knows how many of those there are around Florida, and you are constantly worried or dealing with water inundation, and you know, it doesn't have to be much. You know, we're not talking about feet here. An inch of water in your basement can cause you all kinds of pain, blues, and agony from cost and hassle. Quick dam flood barriers are a simple, easy effective solution to those problems you can have on hand. Bing, bang, boom. They do the work of dozens of sandbags without the hassle, without taking up all the space, because you can just pop them if they fill up, or fold them like they're pillowcases when they're not. Check them out. I've got a link down in the show notes. Quick Dam Flood Barriers through windstormproducts.com. If you've got water inundation on your property, business, or your home, this could be a lifesaver for you. Now, we talked in the introduction about Floridas. Explain why we're talking about Floridas today, Craig.
Sure. And not Florida. I just want to make that clear. Yeah.
Plenty of that.
Floridas. We're talking today specifically about a book with that title, Floridas, and it's a collection of photographs by Anastasia Samoilova and Walker Evans. And Walker Evans being this tremendous, he's known particularly as a Depression era black and white photographer, but he took a lot of pictures here in Florida. And Anastasia has now come along and sort of documented another version of Florida, or other versions of Florida, and very cleverly mixed the two pictures to get the two sets of pictures together. So you can compare and contrast and see the many different kinds of Florida. And we're very fortunate to have her as a guest today.
Absolutely. She's going to be at the Miami Book Fair, which runs November 13th through the 20th. Craig's going to be a part of that. I'll make sure there's a link to the Miami Book Fair in the show notes, along with Anna's book, Florida. She was born in Moscow, came to the United States, found her way to Miami Beach 2016, and has just released this gorgeous, beautiful color photography book, Floridas.
This is such an interesting book project you've put out here. Tell me how you first encountered the work of Walker Evans, whose pictures are mixed in with yours.
I've known of the work for a long time. As I studied photography, I was self-taught initially, and Walker Evans is this monumental figure, right, in the history of this medium period, right? Not just the American photography, but overall photography. He's this cult figure in a way, but there's very little knowledge of his work from Florida. He's mainly associated with the Great Depression and the FSA Commission, Alabama sharecroppers. So Florida is very little known work of his. And yet I saw that there were some critical moments that happened for him in Florida that set the tone for his oeuvre for many years to come. So he's been coming back to Florida for 40 years, and that work has barely ever been published and talked about. So discovering that archive midway into my project is when I decided to include the work.
What did he shoot in Florida? Landscapes or architecture, portraits? What was he here looking at?
It's a wide variety of subject in this best Evans tradition possible. He wasn't limiting himself to just one typology, right? Or any certain approach either. And this is where I really relate to his work and his methods in photography. He was very much a list maker. In fact, it was on commission in Hobie Sound. I think it was a hotel in the 30s. This was 1934, that he put together a list of things to look for in an American town in a letter to a friend. And then he never mailed the letter. He actually kept the list. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if you can trace an entire lineage of photographers who roughly adhere to this list in how they photograph America, the United States and beyond, myself included.
What was on the list? Not the entire list, but a few of the key pieces.
That list is reproduced in my book. And there were bizarre things, but they're so prophetic at the same time. Like, this was in 1934, where he wrote fake culture as one of the items to look out for. And how do you photograph that? And things like...
We got that in Florida.
Advertising, cars, what people look to do for fun, how do they seek sort of this high and not get it? I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. women's clubs, sex. He never really got to photographing sex.
Perhaps it's for the best. You came at photography from a different discipline. This is kind of interesting to me that you didn't start out studying to be a photographer.
Yes, exactly. I actually studied environmental design back in Russia. And so good luck applying that degree in that country. And it was in the early 2000s. So I graduated in 2007. And then I pursued my MFA in visual arts in the United States. We didn't have the MFA degree and still don't back in Russia. Yeah, that's what led to this long journey to photography. I actually used my camera just to document my constructs of these proposed buildings that were supposed to be environmentally conscious and using sustainable materials. So I was self-taught for that purpose in photography. And then later on, I pursued it from a more conceptual standpoint. But it wasn't until my move to Miami in 2016 that I began in observational kind of documentary style photography.
What brought you to Miami?
It was a combination of factors. I was teaching full-time prior to that in the Midwest at a community college and then at another college in the Northeast. Living by the water was a lifelong dream. So I was landlocked back in Moscow and then in Midwest, the same situation. So this was, on one hand, this sort of fantasy that I had in my mind my entire life. And then on the other hand, on a practical level, I got into a semi-subsidized artist residency that provided a free studio in Miami Beach. So that was an incredible opportunity where I could just focus on my art and leave my full-time academic job that was very time-consuming and leaving me very little space, including mental space, to pursue my own work.
Part of the Florida's book focuses on the mythology of Florida in American culture. And, you know, you growing up overseas, living in the Midwest, you come to Miami. How is it similar or totally different from what you'd come to expect, you know, through Miami Vice and Golden Girls and movies and you know, Will Smith, Welcome to Miami, and what you just gather through the ether, so to speak?
Yeah, I only knew of Florida, like you said, sort of from the media, from this construct of this place, right? It's this tropical paradise, shiny and glitzy. And I love the effect of this kind of breaking apart that illusion when I now show my work as an insider to the outside world, you know, European exhibitions and this book that was published in Germany. So people are shocked. And I love that effect, of course, because that's what happened for me. So I arrived here from Massachusetts was my latest outpost, and then to Miami. My work has always dealt with landscape and sense of place and landscape versus place. You know, places is something you inhabit, and then landscape is to be looked at. This perception of this landscape and then living in it, right, in this urban landscape where I am in Miami Beach, and the difference between the two. And also prior to that, my long-term project called Landscape Sublime, I'm looking at different aesthetic categories, the picturesque, the beautiful, and the sublime specifically. I address it from many different standpoints. And in Florida, this was a real experience of the sublime. So it's something that's so grand, it can overwhelm an individual, both aesthetically, right, and this sense of awe. And I've encountered it first with the impending Category 3 hurricane in 2016, which was an easy pass for us. And then next year when Hurricane Irma hit, this is where I got to feel it firsthand, this sense of sublime and fascination and terror in a way, and beauty at the same time. These were very complex and intense feelings that propelled the beginning of that project that became Flood Zone.
Well, talk a little bit about that, about Flood Zone, because I'm really intrigued by that.
Thank you. The title itself came from me frenetically researching where I was located at the time the hurricane hit.
Makes sense. There's a lot of that going around during hurricane season.
Yes. So I didn't realize, you know, and the term most frequently used when I was leaving Russia in 2007 was global warming. I focused on industrial agriculture in the Midwest. So it was always environmentally sort of oriented, my work. But not until Florida have I really deeply thought about climate change and rising sea level. And this was, again, it had this practical impulse because sure. Miami Beach is not very elevated. So it turned out where I was entirely a red flood zone. And I saw that on the day of the hurricane.
Oh boy.
This is where we ignored the previous hurricane because everybody was kind of on the same page that it wasn't going to be too bad. Mm-hmm. And so with the mandatory evacuation in 2017, we didn't evacuate. So we stuck it out with my small family in a sort of older residential condo. We thought, oh, these windows are from the 50s, so we can survive this. Yes. And that the flood zone came out of me and my son going out to evaluate the damages in the neighborhood on our bikes. Prior to that, I was shooting for a year, but speculatively, not knowing yet where it would take me. I was using those images as source material for my collages and paintings. But with Hurricane Irma, I decided to leave it as is, as this document of what I was looking at. And that's why this transition to documentary photography.
And how did that lead into Florida's?
Already in 2019, as I was wrapping up the work on the flood zone project, there were certain things about Florida that I wanted to expand upon. A number of issues, right? Of course, climate change, we know, is not separate from our political choices, right? And how this is just centuries of exploited land and labor came to be. It's not this remote issue that's localized elsewhere, right? Or just on this, you know, waterfront or out there in the glaciers. We're very much living in it, and it needs to be, I think, incorporated in our everyday language more. So with the Florida's work, climate change and environmental issues are still addressed throughout, but I also wanted to include other concerns that are, I'm not claiming any objectivity in this project.
Sure.
But that are the most pertinent to me as, say, a parent and a woman, this roadside gun shop that you could just pull over and get a gun.
And that's the one that had the paintings of assault rifles on the side, outside of the building, right?
Yeah, those are adorable cutouts that were just attached to this roadside gun shop. And it's just one of many. And as an art photographer, I'm specifically not a photojournalist, even though occasionally I get assignments, and that's how I got some aerial shots in this project. But I am an art photographer, so formal aspects of the image still prevail. They will win over whatever the subject I needed to photograph. So this is one of, obviously, dozens of gun shops that I encountered on my road trips. And it was around the time of the 2020 election, and anxiety was very high. In part, this was an impulse to channel that anxiety and to understand the state better. I drove all the way out to Pensacola, and there were multiple road trips. And actually, Craig's book, Oh Florida, was a major resource for research for locations.
I'm happy to hear that. Awesome.
Thank you. And your podcast as well. It was with me on those road trips. But from the book, I actually highlighted several locations. I went to the villages. You know, the images didn't make it into the book, but I was there for a few days.
That's great. I was going to ask you, speaking of guns, I was going to ask you about one particularly arresting image in here, which is a man's torso. He's wearing blue jeans. He's got tattoos of two automatic guns looking like they're tucked into his jeans. He's got a Confederate flag tattooed on his arm, and across his stomach is tattooed No Mercy. And it's just labeled Beachgoer Naples, which struck me as very much an understatement. Oh, and he's got a knife. I forgot to mention he's got a knife and a sheath in his belt. What were the circumstances for taking that picture? Did the guy resist? Was he okay with you walking up and saying, hi, I'm a photographer. Can I take your picture? I mean,
there are a couple of things, you know, and that's the beauty of Florida. When I arrived here, it was, in terms of my work, it was after years of making collages. I'm very much a collagist. So what you see is usually dense layers, including layers of meaning that I try to pack into each individual image. There are never sort of didactic messages in each photograph because I'm not a photojournalist. So there is this ambiguity, and you can still interpret things your own way. And this is, again, coming from a very deep trauma of being dictated what to think for a very long time back where I come from. So I steer clear of that. And yet this slice of this body part, it, to me, looked like a collage and a kind of a perfect, perfect montage of multiple very, well, not conflicting, but quite straightforward messages that this man was displaying. And I think Florida tends to take things to this extreme very often, right?
Yeah.
People's political views get displayed literally on their body. And believe it or not, there are several things that are going for me there. I was on this very long road trip for, this was Naples, you know, en route to the villages. And I had to pull over and I realized that my pants were too tight and they were squishing my stomach. And I had to go and get emergency pants because it's a long drive. It's like a 7-hour drive.
Yeah.
And what I could find were camouflage pants. So that's one thing that's going for me. I had this Hunter's camouflage pants, and I think I had a baseball cap at that time. Anyways, I was like an insider in many of those locations all of a sudden.
So it was a form of camouflage.
I think so. And then believe it or not, so this is a public beach in Naples. On the other side, just minutes apart, there's an image that wasn't as striking. There's an image of a marriage proposal going on, and there's this crowd. So this is a packed beach. The man did not belong to that crowd. He's on his own. There was a girlfriend to the side of him.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I never photograph paparazzi style unless it's really a figure very far away in some landscape where you can't really tell who they are. So there was a report. I made eye contact and asked permission. And he was happy to display his tattoos.
His tats. His tats. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. There's another one I really like. It was a woman eating, I guess he was eating lunch on a patio, and she's surrounded by these enormous buildings that seem sort of unfeeling and cold, but she's this little center of warmth.
Oh, is it towards the end?
That's I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And another sort of protagonist that is a thread throughout the project is a female figure on her own, doing her own thing and not expecting any company. This is perhaps a stand-in for the author. But she was really dressed up and she looked wonderful. And it's in Miami in this rooftop restaurant. She was just in her own space. And she's got a pairing on the spread towards the end, a woman in Tampa, just lounging in a public park on her own. All dressed in pink. So yeah, there are several of those female figures throughout the project.
And then you went to Seaside too, the setting for The Truman Show.
Yes. And I wonder if I picked it up from your book too.
Could be.
Might have been. I think so. Yes. That one felt very, how do I put it politely? Homogeneous in terms of the type of architecture. It certainly felt pre-planned. I think the average cost of a house is like $2 million now.
It's pretty expensive, yeah. Most of them are second homes that people don't live in Seaside the way the architect had expected them to, yeah.
It looked really polished and very much like a Truman Show still. I think they were right on with the location.
One of the subcurrents of the Florida's book is nostalgia, and you only having been in the state for a handful of years, you can't have nostalgia for Florida. So how did you try and capture nostalgia and this incredible, you know, yin and yang Florida has for its nostalgia and also its just rapacious development and willingness to destroy what has been here before and put up the new?
Oh, that's a great question. Nostalgia overall is a bit of a taboo word in photography because it's easy trick, right? But you can't help it here.
Yeah.
Even though I've not been here this long, as an observer, you know, you're tuned in to this environment, and I can sense it in the layers in architecture, in the public space. It's just there. You almost can't miss it unless you really are stuck in just a handful of sort of bubble neighborhoods, insular neighborhoods somewhere in Miami Beach, right? South Beach, or in Miami and Brickell and so forth. But if you just expand your geography in Florida, there are these multiplicities about it. And that's why the title of my book is Florida. So it referring both to Florida containing these multiplicities. You can almost divide it into several states and communities. Mm-hmm. And then that's, of course, my contemporary archive and the one by Walker Evans, which is historic. And he was kind of a bit accused of nostalgia. So he would shoot in the 60s like it was the 30s. And I catch myself doing the same, but I can't help it. I'm drawn to history. And there's too much of it still present in this visual sense in Florida because of the abundance of natural phenomenon that the state, you know, has to overcome to survive, if I'm explaining that well.
Well, you know, you surely still have folks in Russia that you talk to. When they ask you, what's Florida like, what do you tell them?
I show them my pictures. Mm-hmm. And I think it's perfectly suited for art photography because Florida, in a sense, is this construct. It owes its mm-hmm. existence to these perfect images of itself, right? And postcards yeah. and all these, I think, Craig mentioned them in his book as well, right? This whole development of Florida through imagery, you had to convince those tourists to come over and advertise this, what is it, occasional summer storms on the
yes.
postcards.
One of the images in your book that just really kind of grabbed me is the one of, I think it was on Estero, these huge condominiums sort of erupting from the middle of this vast green space. And to me, that really sort of captures what at least that part of Florida has been like in the past. Was that one of your aerial excursions for an assignment?
That one is actually from a hotel that's not
oh.
too dissimilar from those buildings. And this is where you wonder, and the hotel had, you know, water slides. So I took my son there for some special occasion.
Of course.
That's how we ended up on that floor. But yeah, you wonder, and it was this early morning. I wonder how they fared actually through Ian, because it's on that coast. Yeah, you wonder if it's utopian or dystopian living. How it looks right. like another planet. How do they exist? And you start imagining how, you know, how is the infrastructure designed there, and how can we possibly survive?
Well, I wonder, in looking through here, and I noticed that several of your pictures were from Southwest Florida, like that one. Do you plan to go back and do, I know that's a little more journalistic to do a before and after, but to, you know, observe the results of nature's fury?
Yeah. And this is where I have to be careful and sensitive. Since I'm not reporting the news, you know, this is not a right. record for some reportage. I'm an art photographer. And right now I'd feel quite immoral being there in the middle mm-hmm. of this cleanup and human tragedy. And people are debating complete relocation, right? So adaptation is looking like relocation right now for many. Mm-hmm. I do plan to revisit, but later on, and like with the flood zone project and throughout the Florida's project, you will hardly find any acute drama or any kind of photojournalistic sensationalist images. I want to provide a more poetic take and a slower image, in the sense that, you know, it's meant for slower consumption. So it's mm-hmm. working on the level of allegory, of metaphor, rather than this immediate impact. This is, you know, some dramatic event, and psychologically, we assume quick resolution for that, right? Or that the place is not going to stay in that condition for long. So I don't want that because we already have plenty of reportage coming from there and from all the other problematic. So this is where I have to do things differently.
Yeah. But I mean, Hurricane Michael, when it hit the panhandle, folks up there, or that was 2018, folks up there are still rebuilding from that. I suspect we'll be seeing people still trying to figure out what to do in Southwest Florida from Ian 5-6 years from now. Would that be the time to go back, or what do you think?
Maybe sooner. There is actually a photograph from Mexico Beach from last year. This is a COVID time, March 2021, that I went, and the entire community has been erased. This is, I think, quite illustrative of the conflicting feelings that Floridians have about this, you know, living here. People would just approach me to chat and may don't believe that the big one is going to come in the next 100 years, the big one that, referring to another high category hurricane. But it was the most devastating thing I've ever seen. You know, this image of this lilac pink sunset, I'm standing there and all these, I think pipes from septic tanks just sitting empty, and tiles from homes that were just vanished, except for the last standing house. Did you report on that, Craig? The last
standing house in
Mexico Beach?
Yeah, but some of my former colleagues did.
I found that one. And while I was standing there, there was a group of younger looking developers coming by, and they asked me what I was shooting, and I asked what they were shopping for, and they said land now, and nobody believes there's going to be another big one in 100 years. And I said, but how would you build? They said, oh, we only need 10 years to profit.
Wow.
Well, and that sort of brings me back, and it's incredibly ironic that your previous life was in environmental design, right? And sustainability and those issues, and you find yourself now in Miami, one of the most super developed and precariously developed due to climate change places in the world. So with your background in environmental design and your life now in Miami and Miami Beach, when you drive around and look at all the development there, what do you think?
It's complicated, right? And I'm aware of my position being so precarious too. Just the sheer act of driving, especially in traffic while in Miami Beach, is this really dark irony. There was the thing, a piece a couple of years ago at the art fairs of cars made in sand on the beach. You feel like you're just literally drowning yourself and sabotaging your own livelihood. Yeah. Especially coming from this summer, I got a grant to work in Europe quite a bit. So I was shooting there. And I navigated, only knowing English and Russian, I navigated all those trains so easily. It always makes me wonder how it could have been if we had trains here.
Yeah.
And in the larger sense of that word too, right? How it would impact the overall emissions in the world if the United States had trains. So, yeah, and then development-wise, through my work, I'm trying to have this dialogue, right? I'm trying to have conversations. It's in the programming for my exhibitions. It's the kind of audience I'm attempting to invite without, you know, since my images are not of sort of this doom and gloom, they are quite poetic and meditative. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to bridge some things. Ideally, right, and not be divisive in my position. It's more an attempt to ask the right question and to hopefully inspire people to ask each other questions. I don't think anybody has any definitive answers yet to the problem of development in places like Miami.
Florida is known for being sort of an ephemeral place anyway. You mentioned about the developers. Oh, we just need 10 years to, you know, to make a profit and then we're out of here. But you've found something that Walker Evans had photographed and you were there to photograph as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the, was it a boatyard?
Yeah, there was this only one. You know, there's an assumption that I revisited most of his vacations, but it's actually just one spot. And it's this Ribovich Boatworks in West Palm Beach. And he was very hesitant about it back in the 60s. It was for the Fortune magazine edition in 64, but it's still very much owned by the same family. And I think now he would have loved the idea. And it's one of those where it's about representation, right? And it's about what that symbolizes. And to me, it does symbolize this great American dream. You know, and this family had never actually owned a boat. So they're just skilled craftsmen, boat builders, and only now they got the first boat.
Wow.
In the recent years. And I met the sons, and there's an entire archive by Evans there, and his images are on their wall. So it's still owned by the same family, Michael Rybovich. And it's a lovely business, you know, and there's something so heartening about the scale of it. It's one of the few family-owned, you know, American-built boats.
The new book is called Florida's. Anna Samoilova has been our guest. Thank you so much for your time and this remarkable visual archive of the state.
Oh, and Chad, you had heard something recently.
And congratulations. Yes. I hope you've been informed of this before the press release goes out, but you won a big Ulites Art Award, right?
I have, yes. Thank you. And there will be an exhibition of this work in Miami opening at the end of November.
That's
fantastic.
Great.
Where is that going to be at specifically in Miami?
Dot 51 Gallery. It's on mainland and it's going to be during the Art Week. I'm showing several prints from this and I make them all myself in Miami Beach.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
Great. And you're at the Miami Book Fair this year.
I'm at the Miami Book Fair. I don't think my the author of this book, Lauren Groff, contributed a short story.
Yes. Quite a surreal story, but I liked it.
Yeah, and it's based actually on the image that's just hanging behind me, this Venus mirror. Yes, I'm a huge fan of Lauren's work. I don't think she's coming, but she'll be with me in spirit.
Wonderful.
Maybe you can take the mirror.
Yeah, I'll put links to all of those presentations down in the show notes. Anna, continued success. Congratulations on the book, and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you so much.
You've got a copy of the Florida's book, Craig, and have obviously paged through it. Give our listeners some feel of its scope and what's included in there.
It's a fascinating book, and the works of Walker Evans, the classic, you know, the iconic photographer, are mixed in with the works by our guest, and you sometimes you can't tell which one is which. Some you obviously can. They're in color. There's a website mentioned in one of the billboards, things like that, the little context clues, but some of them are so timeless, it's hard to tell. And that's one of the things I liked about it. And the other is some are very, you know, she mentioned about Walker Evans and his list of things. And one of them is fake culture. And there really is some on display here, including the, I think it's called the Wonder House in Orlando, the house that's upside down that you go into. There's a picture of that in there, and pictures of like the seaside post office, which is this very classical looking, you know, classic Greek columns and so forth. But it's, you know, it's in a beach setting, so it's clearly not that. So I really liked it. And I like the fact that the title, I think, tells you there are many Floridas. There's not just one Florida experience, but you can experience a lot of different kinds of Florida. Depending on what you're looking for and what you're looking at.
Yeah. Welcome to Florida's.
Welcome to Florida's.